Good afternoon. Welcome to the FTS Bet Slip on Wednesday, the 11th of May. Jodie's birthday. Sam out in Malta celebrating Jodie's birthday. I think they were going for the Maltese equivalent of a Ritz cream tea thing. You know, when you go and have the tea and cakes and they make the tea in a pot properly. Unlike you flipping heathens. That's what they were doing, the sandwiches with the crusts cut off and all that, going for a posh tea. Is it? I don't know what it is called. It's not called a cream tea. I don't know what they call that when you go to the Ritz. Right, and sit down and have the tea and sandwiches and that. Must have a name. I don't know what it is. Hope you're all well. Apologies. I know I said I'd do a pod Tuesday. Just time is just getting eaten up. I'm obviously trying to catch up from the sort of 6-8 weeks of traumas that we had and doing Zooms, and just everything seems to be taking me longer. Just seemed to be really busy. I just look up and the time's gone. And even now, it's 4 o'clock. I expected to have this out. Well, I had Zooms at 2. I expected to have it all done before then, but I didn't. So there we go. It'll get better. Things will settle down. Get a little break. Created history on Monday. You see, like the nation's favourite David Attenborough in his documentaries, and he often goes on about how you know, the intelligence of animals in these sort of things that he does, and how it's evolved, and how these creatures have evolved with great intelligence to learn new skills. And he shows footage, you know, monkeys, for example, cracking nut kernels open with stones, in effect using them as tools to bash the nut and get to the nut inside. Well, we, old FTS, we usurped Sir David on Monday. For the first time recorded in human history, I put an animal in a room that has more brains than a human. Yeah, I took Izzy over to Suggsy's, and it was very clear which one has more intelligence. It wasn't even a contest, to be honest. Just look at them both and go, the dog's cleverer. He's thick as mince, that boy. The Mindset Pod, I will hopefully do tomorrow. My time gets through. But yeah, it's just the cooking, the cleaning, the washing, the ironing, in amongst all this. They say behind every man's a good woman. I'll be honest, last year when she went, I didn't tend to notice it so much. But this year, I've really, perhaps just trying to look after the dog, I've really struggled a bit, chasing my tail. But we'll get there. What have I done this week? I've updated the goal time and goal percentage sheets on the blog, so they're up. We held the Q&A Zoom with Andy Richmond last night on the racing. Had a reasonable number in the room. We had some questions sent in pre-event, and then obviously questions through the evening. And I've now posted the video of that this morning, emailed out and put it in a Telegram group. We'll add some of the other resources that Andy talked about in that night, the tissue pricing and the 30-50 trading strategy. We'll add those documents over the next couple of days. Thanks, you know, public thank you to Andy. I thanked him last night for coming in and doing that. And as I say, this sort of stuff is very much at an embryonic stage, and a lot of it will be determined by what you guys feedback to us as to what people want to do and where we take the learning. So rather than like the marketers sitting around their table going, let's flog them that, and we're really trying to tailor things to this is what we do. How can we share it with you? How could you use it? And how can you get out of it, which is really the key thing. And all that comes down, as you'll see in the Zoom, with things like your own comfort level, what you're used to, time, this, that and the other. So rather than me sort of saying, we're going to do this now, I think it becomes a bit of a sort of collaborative effort with you guys who listen to this and want to do this stuff, how we share it. So I'll be getting together with Andy and others, you know, Dave, Steve, looking at ways that we can do this and get this sort of stuff sorted out for you on the way. So it's very, very embryonic, but it was a good Zoom, worth a watch. And, you know, there is a lot of duplication. Andy does his way. It's all about process. I do my way. So there's a duplication across the trading styles and things we did, and indeed with the golf as well, which I'll feature in a minute. But you know, it's developing those skills and how we can really put things in place that you guys get the best out of it. That is genuinely why we're doing it. You know, we're not sitting giving up hours of Zoom for free to not do anything with it. We want to get you guys on path. So, as I say, that's on the site. Good, have a good look. Whilst that was going on, obviously, Gerard Ball versus Liverpool. Fucking, when did that become a thing? I saw one the other day that I can't even remember who it was. Another manager's name. Obviously, we've got Potter Ball, Gerard Ball, but there was another one, and I thought that is just one too far for me. I can't remember who it was. You didn't see that back in the day, did you? You didn't see Clough Ball and Paisley Ball, and when's it even become a thing? Absolute fucking nonsense people come out with, honestly. Villa obviously took the early lead, people getting excited, but Liverpool came back to win, and it's over to City tonight, who go to, is it Wolves tonight, I think? Wolves side that have been struggling but did get a late equaliser. I didn't even know they'd equalised against Chelsea. I saw they were 2-0 down. It wasn't until the next day I'd realised that they scored in the 97th minute or whatever it was to get an equaliser. So whilst I do expect City to win, there's a glimmer of hope for Liverpool fans. It's not nailed on. Wolves aren't the easiest team to break down. And City have looked to be signing Haaland, I don't know, $400,000 a week reportedly, and obviously a cut price transfer fee owing to the release clause he's got. And it will be good to see him in the Premier League. It's good to see these players, but it just makes, you know, whilst it's good, then you just look at the other side, it makes an already dominant City stronger, and the game's going to get a whole lot more boring forward. Just got two or three teams as it's been for a number of years, and that's all it's about. And feeding for scraps leads us to the Tottenham hosting the Gooners tomorrow. You know, clubs like that, you know, Arsenal, as I've said, winning titles 20 years ago and now, you know, scrapping around for fourth place as some sort of celebration. I find it personally all a load of old crap. I really do. I don't get the massive, you know, jump up and down over fourth place. I genuinely don't, and people who know me know I don't. I've always been, I'd rather win an FA Cup than get fourth and have the day out and have the party atmosphere. I think it's quite tragic, all this fourth place business, and looks like it might go fifth, sixth, seventh with these Champions League changes. But there we go. I don't see Arsenal losing tomorrow, I'll be honest. I've said that, I don't think. I think the game sets up well for them not having to win. I think if Arsenal had to win the game, you'd see obviously something completely different. But I think that the fact that Arsenal don't have to win, you know, a draw will almost certainly see that sorted. They can just sit and pick us off. You know, they are, whatever Suggsy, the dafter than a spaniel, thinks, they are consistently better than Spurs. You know, you speak to Suggsy, Arsenal, they're crap, they're not very good, they're shit. But the fact is that in the last 32 games, they've amassed 13 points more than Tottenham. If you change the word Arsenal to Liverpool, people wouldn't hesitate to go, oh yeah, they are better than, and that's it. But his North London bias prevents him saying that, but it is a fact. They're more consistent than Spurs. If Spurs play their top football and Arsenal play their top football, I do think Spurs are better. But over the period of games that a league table is, it's about consistency, and Spurs are really inconsistent. Played well at Liverpool at the weekend. Abject before that against Brighton and Brentford. Like Brazil against Newcastle, West Ham and Everton. So you just don't know what version's going to come out of the tombola tomorrow night. But Spurs aren't good when they have to win. You know, there's a lot of pressure on those players to not be failures. And the fans aren't great in these circumstances. It'd be a fantastic atmosphere before the game. But if it kicks off and Spurs look a little bit cagey, the Tottenham crowd can go very quiet quickly and get on players' backs very quickly. So I just think that it does set up that Arsenal can be patient, pick their moments. And I'll be honest, it wouldn't surprise me to see them win it or get a draw at worst. I think you'll see a frantic start. Spurs probably trying just a bit too hard. And obviously if the Gooners take the lead, I think that'll be that. So it'll be interesting. Interesting, and with Spurs at the weekend, obviously they went to Liverpool. Good result, I thought. They played amongst all the shit that Klopp spoke. But it was on Twitter, and we've had an email that the Spurs, the THST, the Tottenham Hotspur Supporters Trust, chose to speak out about a song being sung at Liverpool, basically singing "Sign On, Sign On," which has been a song sung on Merseyside, I believe, both at Liverpool and Everton, as banter, in exclamation marks, I'll say, banter since the 80s. And obviously those people must have sung it on Saturday night at the game. And the Tottenham Order Supporters Trust decided it was prevalent to criticise the Spurs fans for doing so. Made it public, I think it was in Made the Papers and everything, asking them to abstain from singing it, particularly in these sort of times of cost of living crisis. I have no view on the song itself. I think a lot of football songs are daft and some are downright nasty. I've been in Anfield when Liverpool fans are singing Munich 1958. I think that's a lot nastier. You know, we're playing Liverpool. I'm going back 15 years, but I was at Anfield and they're singing Munich 1958 in a song about the plane crashing. You know, these things have gone on. I've been in Spurs when Chelsea and West Ham fans are making gas chamber noises, as I've said before, which really does, that does absolutely disgust me, I'll be honest. But my interest with this now is that Supporters Trust, having stuck their head over the parapet, over this particular parapet, will they now police every song that is sung? Because obviously they've set a precedent, they have to. Spurs fans sing a particularly vile song about Sol Campbell. And the next time this rings out, which almost certainly will be tomorrow, I'm almost certain of it. I tend to find when you make things like this public, it has a sort of opposite effect. The kind of mentality with football fans is, you can't fucking tell us what to sing and we're going to, now we'll do it more. Certainly with the Yid Army chant, you know, every time they talk of banning it, the Spurs fans sing it more. And I think that without doubt tomorrow we will hear the Sol Campbell song. And it is vile. But are they going to issue a further reprimand, and is it going to go through all the time? You know, every single fan chant in grounds up and down the country has the ability to upset someone. Are we now meant to just all sit in the stands and as excited as we can get is jolly good show, lads? Hard luck. I'm just intrigued to where it leads. As I say, it's not about this song and I'm not condoning the song. I'm just interested in how this plays out now. Now Spurs Supporters Trust have stuck their head up and sort of made a stand and said, we're not having that. What are they going to do now? Because all fans of other clubs sing far, far worse. You know, you look at football. Some of my best mates are Arsenal fans. I'm picking one up tomorrow. And I will have a drink with him before the game. I will bring him home. But for the 90 minutes in the middle of it, I'll despise them. I'm interested to know what other fans who attend games, you know, I'm talking about people who go to games regularly and, you know, sit in the terraces, particularly if you go to away games where they tend to be a bit more vocal. What you think? I'm not interested in the views of plastic armchair fans who sit at home wanking over Carragher and Neville and say, oh, I heard this in the background. I'm talking the actual fan experience of going to a game, what your view is on that. I'm really interested. But I'm just interested to see how it plays out, because I think if you've stuck your neck up for that song, either they've got to retreat back into their shell and not say a word, or they have got to come down on every time. You can't just pick that one moment because of the minute we're in a cost of living. There's plenty of vile things. So I was just really interested in the sort of way it's going to play out. That was my only thought of it. Right, what else we got? On to the golf. Yes, golf, that's what this was about. Here we are. We're 10 minutes in, 15 minutes in. I haven't got there yet. See what I mean? This is how I waste time. So last week we did nicely with Homer and Fitzpatrick, mentioned them both in the preview. Told you Homer's game was starting a trend, and I advised them both as trades in the Telegram group on Friday after round one. And we had some nice FTS results, you know, varied depending on people's attitude to risk and what they wanted to do. As Homer won and Fitz came tied second. Again, you've got to make your own decisions in these things. You know, if you lost money on that, I'd love to know if anybody did, because that would be a therapy job. And I've said that earlier in the week. But, you know, looking and thinking, oh, we made this, that and the other. If somebody's got a bit more risk attached to it and wants to wait a bit longer, that shouldn't affect what you do. If you want to green up and get your money out early, there's nothing wrong with that at all. Take your profit when it's there. It's what suits you. But I'll sort of try and do a bit more of how I play them once the football season ends and I've got a bit more time then. You know, we will have less football and I can turn my attention to this a little bit more. It is certainly an area I've expanded, as I've said a few times now, massively over the last 12 months. And I love the way I do it. I just like the way I do it. You know, we've done, what, 2 out of 3 and made good money. And obviously the Rahm one I got wrong in the middle in the Mexico Open just because he happened to do it. And hindsight, you know, as I said last week, I should have left it. But there you go. So this week, it's the week before Major. We've got the USPGA next week. And we return to Texas this week for the third time this year for the Byron Nelson. I think it's the AT&T Byron Nelson, to give it its full name and sponsor, just in case AT&T want to pay me any money. At TPC Craig Ranch, this is the second staging of that. We've been in Texas for the Valero Open this year. We had a WGC there. And whenever we mention Texas as a venue, one name does leap to mind for those of you who follow golf, and that is Texas native Jordan Spieth. Obviously, big things always expected of him when they go back there. I'll get to the players in a minute. The course itself is one of the easier courses on the PGA Tour. Water features on about 13 holes, but it's big greens, standard layout, 10 par 4s, 4 5s and 4 3s, bent grass, and the scoring average is more than 2 under par for the course. So it's a vastly different test to that face last week. Greens here 50% bigger, wider open. And even with the winds last year, the par fives aren't real any test with today's players and equipment. You'll see a load of birdies. It was minus 25 last year. The tournament was won last year by a KH Lee, who was 200-1 pre-event. But it's a birdie fest, a shootout. Not the kind of golf I like watching personally. I much prefer the stuff last week where they're having to think and struggle a bit than this. And being the week before a major, we do have a strong field, 9 of the world's top 20. And we see the return of Scottie Scheffler, making only his second outing since winning the Masters, and this being his first individual one, because the only other thing he played was the pairs, the Zurich Classic, at the end of just a ridiculous streak of form. Racked up 4 wins in 7, including ending with that Masters. Absolutely remarkable. I've thought a lot about it. I was thinking about it walking the dog this morning. It's got to be, for me, arguably one of the best runs of form we've seen from any player, given the fact that he'd never won prior to February. You know, you're used to seeing somebody like Tiger Woods dominate and maybe win 4 weeks in 6 or whatever, but he was a perpetual winner. For a guy to get his first win after sort of being the bridesmaid so often and then just dominate like he did for those 6-7 weeks, truly was fantastic. And he apparently went over to the PGA Southern Hills course where they're playing next week and had a practice round and shot 64. So it may be that rust is not an issue. He tops the betting at 12, so you know, I'm not going to back golfers at 12 pre-event. You know, he may well win. He went to college in Austin, Texas, so he's used to Texas weather, and of course you can't write him off at all for anything currently. He is streets ahead of everyone, but it's a new golf event and you've still got to turn up and get it done. And this is one of those events where I do like to see, you know, particularly the way I going after the first round, because when you've got people like Scheffler on the form he's in at the price he is, and if he keeps going well, he'll only be shorter. Obviously that enables you to find value further down the field, particularly you know, if he's up in the top 10 after round one, he'll still be the main focus. So there's others then that get priced nicely around him. Justin Thomas is next for 14. You know, I've made my views on him known. You know, a few of these. When you go through the top 10 in the betting, which that's where I start, you know, you end up repeating the same lines. He's always got a squiggle for me. Fantastic player. Fantastic. Don't get me wrong. Absolutely rock solid. But when he turns up week after week after week, you find one part of his game, you know, he'll drive the ball well and his putting will be crap. And then he'll get his putting sorted. And next week, he doesn't drive it so well. So I just think he should win more. And at 14, I can avoid him. I'm not saying he won't be up there because he's rock solid. But he's just not for me at 14. Again, I would not be getting my wallet out pre-event on him. And then with the strong field, it's perhaps a surprise name for some of you to see Sam Burns third in the betting at 22 on the exchange. But solid goal for this guy. He's got three victories behind him, six top tens this year, which is only bettered by Scheffler. He was runner-up here last year on minus 22, 10th in strokes gains total, 11th stroke gain on approach, the green, 18th tee to green, top 35 in putting. He has a real strong load of stats behind him, ranks 10th in both par 3 and par 5 scoring. And par 5 scoring this week will be key. So he is the first one on my radar this week that, as I say, in a market that could be dominated by Scheffler and what he does, making others' price a bit more attractive. This is the guy that I've noted first on my radar that if he gets off to a reasonable start, I will be probably jumping on as a trade. Next up, and he's fancied by a few this week, I think, is Will Zalatoris at 24. Yet to get a win, but you know, we were saying that about Scheffler in February, but he certainly hasn't got Scheffler's form. It's quite staggering to think that we were saying that about Scheffler in February. But this is the next name, I think, that tag will be placed. Oh, he hasn't got the win yet, until he does. And to a lot, it seems inevitable he gets the win, and it may well be this week. He's 11th strokes gained off the tee, 11th strokes gained total, 2nd strokes gained approaching the green, which this week will be a key metric with big greens. It won't just be players who hit the green, it'll be, you know, getting it close enough in the birdie range. And we will see a shooter, but his putting is terrible. It's definitely a mental blick. He ranks down around 170th. His action looks horrific when he's under a bit of pressure. And if he is to get that elusive win, he really needs to overcome it. I definitely think it's become a bit of a mental block with him. So I certainly could not touch him pre-event. But if he shows enough with the flat stick first round, then I'm convinced he will be a good trade. So unlike some who this week will have their eyes on next week as a major and be using this as a sort of get the game in shape, I do think that he wants to break his maiden title. The course does set up for him, but the putter's got to behave. So he'll be one I'm just really interested to see how that first round goes and the putting numbers. Same price, 24, is DJ. He misplayed a week after the Masters at the Heritage, missed the cut, hasn't been since, and I think, as what I've just said applies to him, I think DJ's using this as a get in shape for next week. You know, he's a man who's going to, yeah, he wants to win events, but he's going to look at majors. He's played okay, just not been firing, sort of DJ style of 2020, capable of winning any event. And he may well be one to trade over the weekend if he's thereabouts, so that might be one I'd look at, where he is on Friday night going into the weekend, because he's one who can move through the field. His stats this year aren't astounding. You know, 91st putting, 50th approach, 44th shots gained total, 40th in par fives, which I staggered at. You know, they were a huge asset for him when he was dominating the game, his par five play. I just think his game needs fine tuning, and I'm sure he will get back, but I think this week is just literally being used as a tune-up for next week, and he might not be busting a gut to win. So, yeah, one to watch. Matsuyama, he is next. again around the same sort of price, 24th, 26th, 12th in shotgun's approach, 32nd total. He's a good player. Good player, Hideki Matsuyama. Fantastic player. Masters winner, you know, dominated that event. But he putts like Gary Smith. He's 154th, giving up 0.2 of a stroke to the field every round. You just can't do that and win golf tournaments. You know, a solid player for me. Just need to see vast putting improvements. It's very similar to Zalatoris, except that I think he just, again, be another one using this week. Whereas Zalatoris does want to get that win, I think Hideki's probably just going to use this as a sighter for next week and just start to get a bit of confidence with that putter, because he needs to. Because, you know, for a player like that with his all-round game play, you know, when you look at all the stats across the board, there's not many who are higher up consistently in all the ranking. And he's such a solid player, but you just can't be giving, you know, you can't be giving these shots up. That's to the field. He's giving to the good putters up sort of half a shot around, and you just can't do it. Xander Schauffele, 23, so I think he was 26 and somebody backed him. He disappeared as I was watching it at the money. As I was doing this preview, my comments on this guy will be the same every week until he wins. He just doesn't win enough. He just does not win enough. If he plays well, he's not a great trader because people expect him to play well. He's got a lovely, tidy golf swing. But he just doesn't get it enough of done for a player of his talents. Again, I think he'll be looking more at next week, you know, for his chance for a first major win. He's won the FedEx Cup, won tour events. But he just keeps falling short. Lots of people's fancies in majors and never really look like delivering, to be fair. You know, another one sort of finishes fifth, sixth, and often it looks better than it was. Not really seeing him leading or right in the heat of battle in a major. And he's going to be one sort of, you know, sort of Westwood-like, I guess, but hasn't got as prolific winning as Westwood, sort of, you know. Is he going to be one of the best players to not win a major? So I'm sure, again, he'll have a little squeaky eye on next week. Good golfer, just doesn't win enough. And I couldn't back him until I see him win something again and sort of get that back on that road. Next is Jordan Spieth. As I said, the Texas favourite. And if he starts well, watch the market overreact. Of the top 10 in the betting, this is the only one I'd be tempted to put some money on pre-event at 28. If he starts well, he shortens instantly. He won the last event he played, the Heritage, the week after the Masters. Maybe some say fortuitously, but he won it. Top 10 here last year. He's won the Texas Open, so he likes playing in his home state. He's keen to win this as it's in his home state and he hasn't won it. Get it on his CV. The USPGA next week offers him the chance of the Grand Slam. He's won the Open, the Masters, the US Open. Something I think we all thought was inevitable, just a matter of when he does it, when he broke on the scene. But I think this week he can sort of just, rather than people talk about that, if he puts a good show in, the focus will be on can he win this. So I think he's really going to be going all out for this. He's got previous for winning the week before majors. I'm just not sure the course suits his game in a shootout in this type of field. I just personally, for me, I think he needs things a little bit tougher. But I definitely think he is a trader. His game is such that you could back him, if you don't mind, you could back him pre-event at 28 now, and you'll pretty much soon know if you've done your money. He's just a bit hot and cold at the minute up there, or he's going home Friday night. His record pre-Heritage was cut, 35th cut. He's sort of almost become the Tottenham of football, except he's got a few wins. He's a bit of a Tom Bowley. You don't know what you're going to get. He's trying to work on different things all the time, but he will give his all. The one thing I like about this lad, he's an absolute fighter. Every shot counts. And he will trade. You know, he is one that, the particularly with it being in Texas, he will trade if he gets going well. So he is one I don't mind having a little bit on pre-event with the view that I know I might be throwing it away. But there's every chance if he starts half decently, I can get out of a scratch or get my liability out of it. Neiman at 36, another streaky player, not seen again since that Heritage that Spieth won. 15th shot gain total, 25th shot tee to green. Another one I'd like to see after round one. If he starts well, particularly if he's up with the lead, he tends to stay there. So I can happily leave him pre-event and just see where he ends up round one. If he's in the sort of top echelons of the market, then he does tend to hang around. So one I will, I'll just sort of keep a watching brief on. And then the top 10 of the betting is completed by Taylor Gooch. And this guy is one to keep an eye on. 48 on the exchange when I looked. Fourth in par 5 scoring, second in par 3 scoring, 18th shots gained approach overall, 6th shots gained around the green, 27th shots gained total, 7th in score and average overall. Won this year, and this boy has some game, believe me. And I think this is one, Taylor Gooch, people go, who's that? His price is a benefit of better known names in the field. He is one I definitely want on side if he gets going well. Again, you know, after Spieth, he would be the only other one that I'd put anything on pre-event. I think this suits him, this golf course. I love the par 5, par 3 scoring stats. Love his shots gained approach. Love his 7th in score and average overall. Good player. So at 48, certainly one that is on the radar. So out of the sort of top 10 in the betting there, Spieth is the only one who I'd put money up in front, closely followed by maybe Gooch. Top two I'm not interested in. Zalatoris very much depends on how he starts and how that putter goes as one I would look at. The rest I probably wouldn't touch. Maybe have a look at DJ on the weekend, but Matsuyama, Zander, I'm not interested in. Neiman again, only if he's up there after the first round. And obviously I'll update that on the Telegram group if I get involved in any. Then we have some bigger prices. Cameron Champ, 75. You know, the price is a bit too big. Course should suit him. Hits the ball miles. But he had a chance. You know, he was up there in Mexico 2 weeks ago and threw in a triple bogey 8 in the last round. May still be haunting him. But he's certainly trending better. I mean, the guy looked like a world beater a few years ago. He's going to be one of the big names. Disappeared off the planet. He's definitely trending back his game. But he's just got prone to an error. But if he gets off well, he could trade, you know. So there's one. And Maverick McNealy, 65. Another yet to win. But it's got a string of decent results this season. Several top 20s, a second place at the start of the season. He's a decent putter. And his approach play, he was ranked down well below 150 the last couple of years, and he's now sort of closing in on the top 50. So, you know, sort of 100 place improvement on his approach play shows you that he's trending and his game's getting better. So at 65, you know, some other good stats around him. As I say, a decent putter and his approach play, shots gained approach. So I think the improvement there may be one to keep an eye on, 65. And just three I'm going to mention at big prices. The tournament can throw up big price winners. Obviously a 200 last year, 200 to 1. And others that have a squeak here that may trade. Thigala is 140 on the exchange. Third in total birdies. And certainly this week is an opportunity to press that stat home to his advantage. If you make a lot of birdies, you've got a chance this week. So Thigala's too big at 140. Adam Hadwin at 60. He's just another one, just doesn't win enough for me. But he's in good form this season, can get it going. He finished third here in a second tier tournament. Likes the course. He's got a really good shots gained approach figure. So he's just somebody, I think we've bet him with the Golf Guru a few. I think he's just somebody I think should do better. But you've got him at, you've got Thigala 140, Hadwin at 60, and JJ Spawn, who won the week before the Masters. So he's going off, going for the double winner before a major week crown. That's what he's going for. But he's sitting on the exchange at 220, which I think is massive. He sits second in total birdies. Obviously got the confidence of a win. You know, it's only a month ago. So he can certainly outrun that price for sure. So if anybody wanted to throw some throwaway pennies pre-event, there's three there, Thigala, Hadwin and JJ Spawn, that may surprise you. But of course, if you're getting involved at those prices, you may never see your money again. But for me, my focus will be, you know, I might put a few quid on Spieth pre-event tomorrow. But it will be, my focus will be on seeing how things develop after that first round, particularly seeing how Scheffler plays and how that affects the market. Zalatoris putting, how Spieth gets off to a start, because he'll be certainly in the trading, whether Neiman's up there. Taylor Gooch is one I've really got my eye on, and then just to see how players like Champ and McNealy get going as well. So I've got sort of players on my radar. Obviously, as the field develops, I may change my views, because I'll be able to see the stats of how players have played in the first round. But, you know, much like last week where I focused in on Homer and Fitzpatrick and then took them in running, there's probably a chance I'll take a couple of these in running after round one. So that is the AT&T. If you want to sponsor me, AT&T, you know where I am. AT&T, Byron Nelson this week. As I say, I think some of you enjoy these golf previews. We'll try and do some videos on golf trading. No agenda to it. I love the trading the golf. I'm not a massive golf watcher, but I love the trading the golf. And this tournament wouldn't interest me watching it, just birdie fest. I like last week when they've got to struggle a bit. As I said, I like the US Open. That's better than the Club Championship. If you're a golf connoisseur, if you like flowers, the Club Championship's the one. If you like golf, then the US Open's a cracking event. But yes, enjoy. What day is it? I don't know what day it is. Wednesday. Enjoy yourselves. Gooners, have a lovely day tomorrow. Remember, I'm fragile. And I will be back with Zed on Friday as we count down yet another week of the Premier League as we get to the season end. Have a lovely Wednesday, and I'll be back with you. There's not much left of it, to be fair. Have a lovely Wednesday and a Thursday morning, and I'll be back with you all Friday.